Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am introducing a new guest to all of you, our listeners, although I do think a lot of you know this investor, private investor, very well. He goes by the name Doc Jones, well known to a lot of you who visit a number of different resource message boards. As I mentioned, private investor and one that does some really impressive due diligence. I followed along with some of what Doc Jones has been writing over the last, let's say, month now, and I'm impressed at his research. I've even posted one of his research articles, and I've asked Doc to just continue to send us those research articles as I will continue to post those. Now, Doc Jones, since it is your first time on this show, we're not necessarily going to dive into any sectors or any companies in particular. I more want to get some information on how you research companies. As I mentioned, you dive deep into these companies. You read through all of the public information and come up with your own conclusions. Start us off with a broad comment on some of the steps that you start off with as you are researching resource companies.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Corey. Well, to begin with, first I'll hear about a company. The many ways you could hear about this, either a news article or another investor on a message board, something will pique my interest. And then immediately, the first thing I'll do is I'll go and check the company's website and look at their presentation. Now, a presentation is a sales pitch. That's what most people need to understand. It's how the company wants to be seen in the best possible light. And from there, if I still like what I see, I'll look at some basic metrics as far as ounces in the ground, the value of those ounces compared to the market cap, how much cash they have. From there, I would immediately go to the 43-101 filing, which you will find on SEDAR. If you're an investor, you have to read the 43-101, because in there you'll have all the information that they didn't want to have in the presentation. Things such as the cutoff grade that is maybe used to calculate the resource that they have. In some cases, that cutoff grade will be reasonable. In other cases, it won't be. And when you do the math on the cutoff grade compared to the present price of gold or the price of gold that they use, you'll find that that cutoff grade doesn't even justify the cost of just mining it, let alone processing the ore. So that's what I do. You go through the 43-101 and I initially look for reasons not to invest in the company versus looking for, is this going to be a 10 bagger or something like that? I look for the flaws. One would be the cutoff grade that is too low. Another would be that the type of ore that they have, like if it's not an oxide deposit or a free milling deposit, which requires no reagents to liberate the gold from the ore, if it's sulfide and it's a low grade, then chances are it's never going to be a mine. Or that the block model that they may have in there is that their deposit is 500 meters down. You know, unless it's super high grade and you've got a lot of tons there, no one's going to sink a shaft and do a bulk mining scenario underground if it's not a high enough grade. So that's what I would do. I go to the 43-101 and read through all that. And I look in also in there, you will find little interesting things such as the insider ownership, what they paid for their stock. You also find agreements with other companies which may or may not be owned by a member of the executive team. And you can, like, for example, if you're reading the 43-101, you see that they're spending 20% of their budget on security, and the security turns out to be the CEO's dog or brother-in-law or wife, and then you know it's going to be a lifestyle company. Beyond that, after I've done that, then I would go to YouTube and see if I can find any videos on this company that were done at, you know, the Investor Metals Forum or at the Sprott conference, something like that. And then listen to those. And I try to find the oldest one and then chronologically go through them to see if they're actually coming through on the promises that they made over the years or over the last few quarters. And also to hear from them what they see the project as being, whatever it is. And then I make notes on that. And then the next thing to do is take a look at the management team see who's running this company and what have they done before. A good resource for that is going to LinkedIn. You know, for example, if the CEO is someone you've never heard of and you go to LinkedIn and their last job was managing a Burger King, well, that's great if you're looking for someone to run a franchise restaurant that makes hamburgers. But if you're looking for someone who's going to be doing a narrow vein mining in Burkina Faso, then this is probably not the guy for you. So that's also a red flag. As far as this may be a lot more riskier than I thought. You know, Google is great. One thing I love to do on a new investment is I take the CEO's name, the treasurer, the chairman, and I Google their names with the word fraud next to it. See what comes up. You'd be surprised how many people that you didn't think have had charges against them, either for securities fraud, and that's a red flag as well. You know, or they're associated with others who've committed securities fraud. And you know, like it's so hard as it is, just if you have a good company, meaning that you have a strong ethical team, you know, geological risk is enough to sink an investment. You don't want to take the risk in the boardroom because too many people go, oh, it doesn't matter because they've got this really great deposit. A really awful management team can kill a really great deposit, and they will bleed you dry through dilution, through not being great stewards of your of capital, making like there's a company I won't name names, but there's a company that it's a junior company, they have a market cap of about 26 million, and the CEO is making $600,000 a year. $600,000 a year. How is that justifiable? Right. So they have to be aligned with you. I like to see at least 20% insider ownership so that that we are aligned. And I would also, if I'm going to invest in a company before I make that first purchase, I go to SEDAR and I look at the prospectus for when they went public to find out if there's any change of control clauses where they don't have kind of some sweet deal to sell out the company like Cobalt 27 did. It's no longer public, so we can talk about that management. They cashed out. They sold the company at the bottom of the market. The company had great assets in the lines. They had a bunch of royalties on some cobalt mines, as well as they had physical cobalt. And they sold it for next to nothing, and the management team got a $7 million payout. Right? So you want to check those things. The prospectus will have that. It'll also tell you how much they initially paid for their shares and how the company was formed. And it's also a good idea, like say the company went public 3-4 years ago, in the prospectus, you'll see the original share count, right? Because too many people go, they'll look at a chart and they'll say that this company was, you know, $5 10 years ago and it's only 50 cents now. It could easily just go back to its old all-time high, but they don't consider the fact that since then the dilution has happened 20x. So it could have essentially almost the same market cap as back then, but it's just because the share count is so vast now. There's another CEO of a company that he would on webinars, he would tout the fact that the last iron ore project he had, that company started with a 20 million market cap, and when he left it had a 500 million market cap. Great for him. I'm sure he made a lot of money. But the share price went nowhere because of the massive dilution that happened over that time period. A good example of a positive outcome in that way, you look at Great Bear. Their share structure has remained extremely tight. They keep raising money at higher and higher levels. For every dollar they raise, I believe the share price has gone up 15x. You know, so and they're great with capital discipline. You know, so that's another thing to look for.
So one thing I'm hearing a lot here, Doc Jones, is a lot does come down to management, right? And you can find out a lot about management through what's posted on SEDAR. I like going to those management information circulars. However, sometimes it's also interesting just to see how irregularly those are posted too. I like to see a company that's constantly updating you on that. You can see how much they're getting paid, see what kind of shares they're holding. And to your point about companies or management teams that tout the fact that they've been able to raise this much money, that doesn't mean that they've created value on the back end of that. So obviously important for management team. What about supporting staff, though, when it comes to either technical advisors or, say, VP of exploration, these key aspects of the company that are also needed to drive them forward? What research do you do into these gentlemen?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Same sort of thing. You want to Google them at least, go to their LinkedIn. You can go so far as if you go to PDAC or one of those conferences, ask people. If you don't know, ask someone. But if they are good at what they do, then it won't be too hard to find things out about them. You know, you want, as far as a technical advisor, you want someone who's done this before and been successful. You don't want a geo whose last three companies ended up going to zero.
Now, let's go back to project-specific stuff, because management, look, there are some glaring issues that you need to look for in management. And obviously, you want to see management teams that have sold companies before or even built mines. But let's talk about that whole cutoff grade concept, because I think a lot of people don't look close enough at the cutoff grade. They look at the grade that's reported in the news releases that is hand-selected from companies. What is the factor of cutoff grade that you dive into that either turns you away or attracts you if, say, they are being a bit more conservative with the cutoff grade that they're using?
Well, if you're dealing with a company that has a PEA, it should be in. You look, if a company has a PEA, you got to read the PEA. In there, there will be a section that will tell you exactly how much it's going to cost them to mine it and how much to process it and their G&A. So it'll give you a breakdown of basically the cash cost to mine each ton. Now, if that cash cost is $28 total and their cutoff grade is 0.5 grams a ton, then you take the price they used in the PEA. Or right now, I suggest people use about 1500 or 1600 gold for long-term price, you know, to be conservative. But if you take today's 1800 gold, you divide that by 31.1, which is just 31.1 grams in an ounce. That'll give you the price of a gram. A gram today is like $56. So a half a gram would be approximately $28. That's the value of that ton, right? So if they're cut off, if they say in their PEA that their costs are going to be at least $26 a ton to take it out of the ground, process it, and pay for corporate, and they're using a cutoff grade that is 0.3 or 0.2, then it's fiction. It's numerically impossible to make money on that, right? So the cutoff grade is very important. And conversely, where I have excelled is also, you know, because we're in a market now where there's a lot of companies out there that had put out PEAs at much lower gold prices, like in 2013, 2012. You know, like there's one, like you take Cassiar Gold, for example. It's, you know, they got this free milling deposit, over 1 million ounces. It's all within 100 meters of the surface. About 1.5 grams per ton is the average grade. And they use a cutoff grade of 0.7, right? They're up in an area. They're not too far from Victoria Gold. Victoria Gold, and this is another thing you do, you should always compare to other mines around you to see what it costs them. Victoria Gold, their run of mine grade is 0.63. So Cassiar had a cutoff grade that was higher than the run of mine of the Eagle Mine, right? And the Eagle Mine isn't a purely oxide play, right? It's oxide with transition and sulfide ore. Whereas Cassiar, it's all free milling, which means it doesn't require any reagents to liberate the gold. So it's a very cheap process, right? So in my due diligence, it's one of my investments. You know, you talk about it, you know. I looked at that and they did their 43-101. They used a gold price of 1300 and a cutoff grade of 0.7. So by lowering that cutoff grade to something that is more reasonable, and I looked at Victoria Gold, their cost to get it, processing, mining, and G&A was about $12 a ton. So you could take that cutoff grade and bring it down to 0.4, right? 0.4, 0.3, 0.3 might be a little close, but 0.4 and still have a reasonable profit margin on that. And in doing so without drilling anything at all, because it was in the 43-101, they showed what the resource would be at different grades, then they would add about 200,000 ounces to that resource without putting a drill in the ground, right? So when I do my analysis on that initially, I didn't do it on a million ounces at 0.7. I lowered the cutoff grade because I figured that's what they're going to do. And in fact, recently the CEO said that's what they're going to do when they do the next resource update. So the cutoff grade is very important both ways, you know, to look at what the future prospects could be, especially if a company has a PEA, like Cardinal Resources was one of my investments last year. They've been taken out, so you can't buy the stock, but it's a good anecdote. So that one, it was after TMAC Resources got taken out the first time. I had a large position in TMAC and bought that around 60 cents and then took the money at $1.70, and then I went to my file and found, okay, what's next? What's the next takeout? Because I go to PDAC each year and I keep a file on companies. And sometimes it takes 3 or 4 years before I can invest in them because they're not the price I want to own them at. And so Cardinal Resources was in there, and it was a large open pit in Africa, you know, but 5-6 million ounces, and their PEA was done at 1300 gold. They had a high grade starter pit that would, at the current gold prices, it would pay out, basically cover the cost of building the mine in 6 months, and would produce 200, 250,000 ounces a year for 20 years, right? With them, it was the same thing. I went in there, but there's also something else in a PEA. You have to look at the assumptions that they use for their costs. For example, if you're dealing with, because gold, you're collecting US dollars for gold as a producer, but a lot of times your fixed costs are going to be in a different currency. So the attraction with Cardinal is the cost they had modeled in there for fuel, because if you have an open pit mine, you're burning a lot of diesel and whatnot, was about 60% higher than the current spot rate. As well as the currency that they used at the time back then, the Aussie dollar, a lot of their payroll was going to be paid in Aussie dollars, was about 92 cents to the US dollar, where currently it's like 60. So you can model all that out and look at the currency exchange and the cost, the input cost, and realize that this mine is going to make so much money when you factor in the current environment. Just to get it up and running, it'll pay out in 5-6 months. And after that, it's all free and clear. You own everything, right? And then you've got 19 years of cash flow. And then what do they do with that? So those are the things to look at, cost assumptions. Conversely, if you have a company that did a PEA during the last major bull cycle during the financial crisis, when gold went up to 1900 and they did PEA at 1800 or at 1900, something like that, and you're looking at this company, you know, in the last year, and you're like, wow, look at the robust economics here. You know, like they have an IRR, internal rate of return of like 65%. You always have to look at what are the assumptions? You know, there's investing is a lot of math. Basically, there's lots of formulas, you know, and you have to look at what are the inputs that they're putting in this thing, in this formula, to arrive at this is how much profit, right? So that's another interesting thing to look at in there.
Let's talk about stage of projects too. We are running a bit long on this interview, so probably last question, then I'll get you out of here, but I am going to have you back on here, Doc Jones. In terms of stage of projects, you clearly like the projects that are a bit more advanced, that you can put numbers, build models around, build some sort of economics. What is your preferred stage of project?
Well, it depends. And what I mean by that is, I prefer a company that has an asset that I can put a value on, so that then I can determine whether or not it's trading at a fair value, right? So I do like companies that already have a resource that I can look at and decide whether or not it's got the possibilities to be expanded, or companies that already have a cash flow, like, you know, there's Tarachi, which, you know, I've done a lot of work on modeling that. You know, they're a different story where they don't have a resource, where they have a tailings operation that they just acquired, which is going to generate cash flow for 4 years, starting a year from now. And based on 1850 gold, all the assumptions out there, including their taxes and the costs and all that, they're going to clear about 55 million and this company has an enterprise value of $14 million. And then last week, with an interview with a newsletter writer, they said that there is a 700,000 ton tailings pile near where they are now that used to be part of the tailings pile they acquired. So if you extrapolate, it was part of it, and it's probably running about the same grade. And if they can get a hold of that, that in itself will extend the cash flow life by another 2 years, which in total, net to the company, all unencumbered cash, would be about close to 90 million Canadian that they will generate over 6 years. Current enterprise value, 14 million. So for me, that is an attractive offer, right? Because then I've got the hedge of that asset, much like if you're dealing with an oil company, you know, what is the, what is their proved developed reserves, right? Because those things can be turned into cash very quickly.
All right. Hey, Doc Jones, great chatting with you, buddy. It's great to have you on the show. I'm very excited to bring you back on more regularly as a guest. This was really just an update on what you look for in companies. I'm sure everybody wants to hear a bit more of the companies that you are investing in. And that's why I'm going to keep on bringing you back on. But really, I think the takeaway here is look to CDAR and really do your due diligence. Make sure you understand the management team and dive into these reports that are put out that are, well, some of the information cherry picked in terms of what the companies report. And, well, it takes a while to read through these type of reports, but you can learn a lot about projects and companies. Doc Jones, great having you on the show. We'll have you back on in another couple of weeks. Thank you for your time.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Corey.